When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today, we're going to be talking about something that's right up our alley. Mars, the red planet. And it's not just about colonizing our red neighbor. It's about what lies beneath its surface. And recently, scientists discovered that the core of Mars isn't as big as once thought. And after poring over data from NASA's InSight mission, two independent studies found that the planet's core, in fact, much closer in size to Earth's own core. Now, intriguingly, these revised measurements were made possible by considering the presence of a previously undiscovered molten rock ocean deep beneath Mars' surface. So why should we care about Mars' core? Aside from its obvious scientific interest, the newly discovered details shake up our understanding of planetary formation and have us rethinking the red planet's history. We've got five segments for you, so stay tuned. And the first one is about the InSight mission and Martian's proportions. Now, the InSight mission initially painted a rather unusual portrait of Mars' inner workings. The lander's seismometer had detected Mars quakes, helping to construct an initial model of the planet's core. Now, researchers were initially puzzled. The core seemed too big and not dense enough for a planet of Mars' size. But then they realized they might be missing something in their models. This sense of something missing was validated when a meteor crashed into Mars on September 18, 2021, and the impact generated seismic waves that allowed scientists to study the core in more detail. A geophysicist at University Paris-Cité said that this event marked a turning point in their research. So it turns out that the initial estimates were indeed a little bit off. Mars's core isn't that peculiar after all. Instead, it's very similar to Earth's. But what led to this discrepancy? Well, that brings us to the next part. Both studies discovered a significant factor that had been overlooked. A molten ocean of rock beneath the Martian surface. Dr. Khan says that this molten sea doesn't exist on Earth, and his presence could require revising of our understanding of how Mars evolved. And this molten ocean lies beneath Mars's solid mantle and is kept liquefied by radioactive elements. Researchers now believe that this ocean made the underlying core appear larger than it is. This could be a game changer, as it provides us with insights into the geological peculiars of other celestial bodies, including our own planet. So when scientists revisited the seismic data, combined it with computer simulations, the molten rock ocean became evident. And with this new piece of puzzle, the core's size was revised, now approximating a radius of 1,000 miles, a denser, iron-rich orb easier to explain. The findings have garnered substantial attention, not least because they questioned previous assumptions about Mars's history, and researchers initially thought that Mars's magnetic field, which disappeared about 3.8 million years ago, was generated by a churning liquid iron core. But this newly discovered molten ocean would have kept the core too warm for this process. A possible explanation proposed by Dr. Samuel suggests Mars may have had moons with significant gravitational pull to stir up magnetic movements in the core. And although this is still speculative, it introduces a brand new path of inquiry into Mars's history and the properties required for planetary magnetic fields. The revelations about Mars's core and the molten rock ocean beneath its surface are not just academic exercises, though. They have real-world application for future Mars missions. In understanding the internal structure of the red planet, can guide mission planners in choosing landing sites and deploying instrumentation. For instance, this new insight might help in the placement of seismometers that can capture data from Mars quakes more effectively, or in the development of drilling technologies capable of penetrating layers of different consistencies and temperatures. Additionally, these findings about the molten ocean could have major repercussions for the search for life, past or present, on the red planet. Now, given the temperature and pressure conditions that must exist for such a molten layer, researchers are curious to explore whether these same conditions could support microbial life or unique mineral formations. If either were discovered, it would not only rewrite our understanding of Mars, but also of life's potential to exist in extreme environments. And furthermore, the discovery of the molten rock ocean and the resulting adjustment in our understanding of Mars's core could influence the design of spacecraft destined for Mars. And since the planet's gravitational characteristics may be slightly different than we originally thought, the spacecraft might require adjustments in landing gear or navigation systems to accommodate this new data. Now, the absence of a Martian magnetic field with this molten layer helps to explain has practical ramifications for human missions to Mars. Without a magnetic field, Mars has a limited ability to retain an atmosphere, which in turn affects its capability to hold water. Now, understanding the relationship between the core, the molten ocean, and the absence of a magnetic field can help mission planners prepare for the conditions astronauts will face, particularly in regard to radiation exposure and the need for life support systems. Now, the work of scientists and others makes it clear that our understanding of Mars is still developing. We may have rovers on the planet's surface and satellites in its orbit, but the red planet continues to be a source of intriguing mysteries. Who knows what other surprises lie beneath its surface waiting to be discovered? For those of us intrigued by the prospects of interplanetary travel and colonization, these findings offer more than just scientific trivia. They provide a fundamental understanding of what makes up Mars, and by extension, offers clues into the origins and makeup of our own celestial body and other worlds in our solar system. Next up, we're going to focus on the monumental strides being taken in the Artemis program to land humans back on the moon. With Artemis 1 successfully completed and Artemis 2 on track for a late 2024, possibly 2025 launch, the space community is buzzing with anticipation. Now, the key person responsible for this moon landing endeavor is Dr. Lisa Watson-Morgan, the manager of the Human Landing System Program at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center. Now, our conversation today will look at the hurdles and the opportunities presented by both SpaceX and Jeff Bezos' company, Blue Origin, as they develop landers that could soon be making history. Now, Dr. Lisa Watson-Morgan is sort of the linchpin when it comes to the mission of landing humans back on the moon. She's working on some hefty challenges, but as she puts it, right now, today, I don't see anything that's stopping us. Watson-Morgan appreciates the innovation SpaceX has contributed, particularly with its advancements in rocket capabilities. Now, SpaceX's partnership with Blue Origin and Lockheed Martin experience from their Orion program also bodes well for the Artemis missions in the future. But the excitement doesn't come without a dose of realism. As the senior director of human spaceflight programs at SpaceX, Benji Reed, put it during a fireside chat, launch is signal and everything else is noise. The emphasis is on doing rather than theorizing, on testing rather than speculating. It's this hands-on approach that's shaping the HLS program's future. Now, the next big task for Watson-Morgan and her team is SpaceX's Starship, designed to serve as the upper stage of a two-stage rocket. And tests are underway at Starbase near Boca Chica Beach in South Texas, and every test flight is another step closer to making moon landings a reality. However, Watson-Morgan expresses concern about SpaceX's very tight schedule, emphasizing that test flights are critical to hardware development. Now, regulatory issues also play a role in shaping the HLS program. For instance, SpaceX is pending approval from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service due to concerns about the water deluge system added to the Starship launch pad. And regulatory milestones may seem mundane and boring, but they're very essential for maintaining the integrity of space missions and ensuring environmental stewardship. Now, it's not just about rockets and landers, though. It's about the meticulous work behind the scenes, the people that are in this. From medical kit testing to training system delivery and crew displays, every aspect is being looked into and worked on right now. And Watson-Morgan highlighted that while the world is captivated by spectacular tests and giant rockets being launched, her team is working closely with SpaceX to address all mission-unique milestones. Now, this is the Blue Origin part, the Jeff Bezos part. And while SpaceX has been in the spotlight, Blue Origin is also playing a role in the HLS program, headed by a national team that includes industry giants like Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and others. Blue Origin is developing the Blue Moon Mark II lander, the MK2. This lander promises to be a game changer, capable of transporting up to 30 metric tons in one direction. Now, Watson Morgan and her team are dividing their attention and resources equally between SpaceX and Blue Origin. It's always good to have a backup, to have two different systems in case something fails, and they're recognizing the unique challenges and technologies each company brings to the table. Now, Blue Origin is working with hydrogen as fuel, unlike SpaceX's methane, but both need to solve similar engineering challenges like propellant transfer. SpaceX's Dragon spacecraft has already been a successful venture for the company, and docking many times with the International Space Station and taking numerous humans into space. Now, the insights gained from Dragon's operations are now being applied to Starship. Both SpaceX and Watson Morgan appreciate the overlap in tech and lessons that can be shared between the two spacecraft. And Watson Morgan draws parallels between the HLS program and the Commercial Crew program, or the CCP. She noted that the HLS program also borrows ideas of having unfettered access to the contractors and providers' base data to streamline decision-making and enhance efficiency. And this approach allows her and her team to resolve issues much faster, a critical factor in keeping the program on schedule. Now, as we look ahead to 2024, though, the propellant transfer demonstration is going to be a huge step forward that could significantly affect the trajectory of future missions. Successfully demonstrating this tech not only gets us closer to the moon, but also opens doors for future solar system exploration. Dr. Lisa Watson Morgan is particularly focused on this test, as it'll lay the foundation for subsequent missions, ensuring that both SpaceX and Blue Origin's technology can effectively operate in lunar conditions. And beyond propellant transfers, Watson Morgan and her team are also deeply invested in the human factors of these missions. Training astronauts to adapt to the conditions in a lunar lander is not a simple task, and simulations are being run to prepare them for every conceivable scenario. Now, mock landers are being used to fine-tune not just the astronauts' actions, but also the technology that will be on board that they'll be using to pilot this craft to the moon. What's also interesting is the pace at which these developments are happening. With a target of 2024 for Artemis II, there's little room to delay. Both SpaceX and Blue Origin are involved in rigorous testing, from propellant storage to flammability tests within crew cabins, to make sure everything is set for these lunar missions. And these tests are becoming increasingly complex, involving not just individual components, but integrated systems, a crucial step forward for the actual flights. And Watson Morgan holds weekly meetings with Blue Origin, and more frequent ones if necessary, to ensure that the program stays on track. And these check-ins are more than just status updates. They're collaborative sessions of a team where problems are identified, solutions proposed, and action items are assigned and delivered. And with the countdown to 2024 right around the corner, there's a sense of urgency, but also a collective determination to make history once again. Next, we'll be discussing SpaceX's plans to launch not just one, but two Falcon 9 missions on Sunday. We'll also cover how these launches mark significant milestones in Starlink's progress, including an improvement in satellite delivery capabilities that SpaceX has yet to disclose. Now, to top it off, we'll also discuss how Starlink is poised to step into new roles in geopolitics, as indicated by Elon Musk's latest interactions online. Now, SpaceX kicked off Sunday with a bang, launching the largest batch of second-generation Starlink satellites from the West Coast. And the liftoff was particularly noteworthy, as it took place at Vandenberg Space Force Base in California, marking a change in SpaceX's usual launch sites. The Falcon 9 rocket soared into the skies with 22 satellites in tow. That's important, making it the first time a Falcon 9 has carried such a heavy payload of second-generation V2 mini-satellites from this location. And until now, West Coast missions had been limited to deploying between 15 and 21 Starlink satellites, depending on their designated orbit. Now, this begs the question, how has SpaceX managed to increase its satellite carrying capabilities? The company hasn't explicitly stated whether this is due to a performance upgrade in the Falcon 9 or a possible reduction in the total weight of these satellites. But whatever the reason, this increase in capacity could set a new standard for future launches for SpaceX. Now, the launch set for later on in today and Sunday from Cape Canaveral Space Force Station aims to put another 23 satellites into orbit. Interestingly, this would be a back-to-back launch event, making it a doubly special day for SpaceX, and Starlink enthusiasts alike. Now, this dual launch represents a significant advancement in SpaceX's Starlink project, setting new milestones in terms of both the number of satellites launched and the technological capabilities of the rocket, and possibly the size of the satellites and the weight of the satellites. Now, Falcon 9's first stage booster for this mission, identified by tail number B1075, is far from a newcomer, though. Having entered service earlier this year, this seasoned booster veteran has already undertaken 7 missions. Starting with carrying 51 older generation Starlinks into orbit, it proceeded to launch the Tranche 0 Flight 1 mission for the U.S. Military Space Development Agency. Following that, it participated in 4 more Starlink delivery missions. And in most recent flight history before today's launch was on September 25th, revealing a 34-day turnaround. And after detaching from the Falcon 9 second stage, B1075 made a successful landing on the drone ship Of Course I Still Love You, stationed off the coast of Baja California. And this reusability factor of Falcon 9's first stage boosters not only reduces costs, but also exemplifies SpaceX's commitment to sustainable space exploration. It's not just a technological marvel, but also an economic strategy that has revolutionized space travel. Now, the safe landing of the booster for the 7th time indicates this amazing build and the reliable performance. And these are factors that make SpaceX the leader in commercial space right now. Now, post-launch, the 22 Starlink satellites were slated for deployment just over an hour into the flight, and with their successful release, the total number of Starlink satellites in orbit now nears the 5,000 mark, a stat provided by Jonathan McDowell, an astronomer who tracks such activities. In the past year alone, SpaceX has completed 25 orbital missions from Vandenberg, averaging one launch approximately every 2 weeks. And if we include launches from Cape Canaveral, SpaceX has performed 89 orbital missions in the last 365 days, averaging one launch every 4.1 days. That's absolutely incredible compared to old space. Now, the increasing number of Starlink satellites provides not only improved global internet coverage, but also points toward SpaceX's growing dominance in the commercial space launch market. Now, Elon Musk's recent interactions on social media indicate Starlink's evolving role in global affairs. And with communication networks severely disrupted in Gaza due to ongoing conflicts, Musk has said that SpaceX aims to provide connectivity to internationally recognized aid organizations in the region. While it's uncertain whether any Starlink terminals are currently in Gaza, Musk assured that his company would support communication links for aid groups. His replies to public figures like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the International Telecommunication Union showed that Musk is aware of the dire situation and the need for reliable communications during such crises. Now, in situations where traditional networks fail or are intentionally disabled, Starlink could provide a lifeline for emergency services and humanitarian missions. Now, this marks a huge step for SpaceX and Starlink, as it demonstrates the platform's capacity for broader applications beyond commercial use, potentially serving as a vital tool in geopolitical and humanitarian crises. Now, as this becomes part of the global communications fabric, the ethical implications of its involvement in humanitarian and geopolitical crises comes to the forefront. Now, this announcement from Elon Musk to aid organizations in Gaza speaks volume about this evolving role of Starlink. The decision has generated discussions on the ethical responsibilities that come with controlling such a powerful communications tool. And Musk's interactions with political figures and international organizations suggest a growing recognition of the need for ethical governance in the use of Starlink technology. And while SpaceX's primary goal may be commercial, the system's capabilities offer unique advances in crisis situations where conventional communication channels are compromised or are just unavailable. However, such involvement also raises questions about how these technologies could be regulated, particularly when they cross into the domain of international politics and human rights. And who holds SpaceX accountable in these situations? The discussion is complex and likely to become more so as private companies like SpaceX continue to break new ground in what was once the exclusive purview of national governments. Now, the challenge moving forward will be to integrate these powerful tools in a way that aligns with ethical norms and international laws. And as Starlink continues to grow its potential influence on global communications and, by extension, global events, is sure to be a topic of ongoing debate and scrutiny. The next part, we're unpacking the recent updates on SpaceX's Starship, which has been in the spotlight for both technological advancements, huge rocket 400 plus feet tall, and the most powerful rocket in the world. And it's been in the spotlight lately for regulatory delays mainly, and the testing that's been done within the last week. Now, SpaceX has performed all necessary pre-flight operations, but this massive rocket still awaits crucial permits from federal agencies. While many look to the skies with eagerness, Starship is grounded, and as the completion of the launch licensing process remains a pending affair. SpaceX had its second test flight planned for Starship and even completed a full wet dress rehearsal. However, the company faces multiple regulatory hoops before the rocket can break Earth's gravitational pull. And one of the last major hurdles involves a review by the Federal Wildlife Service, the FWS, in conjunction with the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA. And this review is a detailed examination of Starship's potential environmental impacts, particularly focusing on the newly installed water deluge system at the Boca Chica launch site in Texas. Now, earlier this year, a test flight faced severe issues, ranging from damaged launch mounts to disruptions in local wildlife and even uncontrolled fires. And this led to a comprehensive investigation, resulting in 63 corrective actions proposed for SpaceX, all of which they claim to have completed by September 10th. Now, the newly installed water deluge system, designed to mitigate the rocket's immense force during liftoff, is under close scrutiny by the FWS to confirm its compliance with federal regulations, particularly the Federal Clean Water Act. Now, the review by FWS is mandated by the Endangered Species Act, which requires reinitiating formal consultations for projects with substantial modifications. And the water deluge system is a substantial modification to the underbelly of the launch system that Starship goes out from. Now, given the serious nature of these regulations and the sensitive ecosystem surrounding the Boca Chica region, this review is a critical step before SpaceX can proceed with its ambitious second launch of Starship and hopefully make it to orbit. Now, the FAA has its own history with SpaceX's Starship. It concluded its own investigation in September, but hasn't yet green-lighted the second flight, pending the FWS assessment. And if the FAA feels that the modifications made by SpaceX warrant reevaluation, we might be looking at even more extensive regulatory review process. Now, last August, the FAA tried to kickstart consultations by providing a new biological assessment. However, the Fish and Wildlife Service found this data insufficient for a full review, prompting another submission in early October. And this initiated the formal consultation process, which will decide the fate of the Starship project. The FWS has until March 3rd of 2024 to offer its consultations and its conclusions, although it aims to wrap up the process by November 18th this year. It seems that both regulatory bodies, while exercising due caution, have different opinions and priorities and timelines. SpaceX recently faulted the FAA for being understaffed, claiming that this was a significant cause for the delays. And while this may be true to some extent, SpaceX's own decision to move fast and break things has led them into a tangled web of regulations and reviews. SpaceX is doing things outside of the normal regulatory system, and they're doing things faster and harder than everybody else in the industry. So the regulations, according to SpaceX, have to catch up to them. Now, the Coast Guard District 9 has also issued a notice suggesting that the next rocket launching operations are planned for between 5:25 to 11 a.m. near Boca Chica Beach. However, as we all know, such schedules are not set in stone and can change at a moment's notice, especially considering the FAA's approval and still pending. And as of now, all eyes are on the calendar and the regulatory boards. Despite these delays, SpaceX has been quite proactive. Just Tuesday, the company conducted a full wet dress rehearsal, fueling both the Starship and the Super Heavy booster with more than 10 million pounds of propellant. And the vehicle is said to be ready for its second test flight, pending, of course, regulatory approval. Now, the upcoming tests are also set to receive support in the form of imagery from one of NASA's WB-57 high-altitude research aircraft. And while regulatory boards continue their assessments, SpaceX hasn't slowed down its preparations for the second test flight. signaling its confidence in eventually obtaining the required approvals. Now, for those keeping an eye on potential launch dates, it's important to manage your expectations, though. Given the layers of regulation and multiple agencies involved, the exact launch window remains speculative. FAA spokesperson Steve Colm has expressed optimism about completing the safety review by the end of October, but this isn't quite confirmed yet. And SpaceX, despite the looming uncertainty, has continued with its rigorous testing, continuously testing at Starbase in Texas. They recently showcased their new deluge system, which has become a focus of environmental concerns. The Fish and Wildlife Service is evaluating the system's environmental impact, particularly concerning the endangered species residing in the surrounding wetland habitats. And the deluge system, which is essential for controlling heat, noise, and force, raises a few environmental eyebrows. Environmental advocates have questioned SpaceX's permitting for the system under the Clean Water Act, as the water used is exposed to a range of contaminants, posing a risk to sensitive habitats. And according to Texas Commission of Environmental Quality, SpaceX currently holds only a stormwater permit for the site. And the FWS and the Texas Park and Wildlife Department have both engaged in cleanup efforts following the previous test flight, which had widespread effects, including a dust plume that reached areas as far away as about 6.5 miles. SpaceX's journey to the second launch of the Starship has been a little bit bumpy, and the maiden flight in April not only caused extensive damage to the launch pad, but also led to an out-of-control tumble and a subsequent explosion over the Gulf of Mexico. So where does this leave SpaceX? After all, this isn't just a run-of-the-mill tech startup. It's a company that has literally changed our relationship with space exploration. However, with great power comes great responsibility, and understaffed FAA can be blamed for only so much. At the end of the day, SpaceX chose to adhere to a philosophy that's more Silicon Valley than Kennedy Space Center. Move fast, take risks, and sometimes pay the price. But can you really afford to move fast and break things when what you're breaking could be fragile ecosystems or even endanger human life? Now, the fact remains that the upcoming test flight of the Starship has been hamstrung in part by SpaceX's own missteps, and they've found themselves entangled in a web of regulatory review processes and corrective actions that are partly the result of a precarious test flight and environmental concerns. And while they've claimed to complete 63 corrective actions in partnership with the FAA, the ball is now in the court of the Fish and Wildlife Service, which is reviewing the environmental impact of Starbase's new deluge system. Meanwhile, SpaceX has been fueling the rockets and performing flight-like rehearsals. They've clearly ready and eager to proceed, but the regulatory apparatus is not something one can simply wish away, especially when public safety and environmental conservation are at stake. So as much as SpaceX might be feeling the itch to get Starship back in the sky, they must also reckon with the consequences of their previous decisions. Let's not forget, amid all these delays and regulatory issues, SpaceX has created an awe-inspiring machine. It's a huge Starship. SpaceX has created a gigantic rocket, and Starship is the largest rocket ever built, designed to take humans to Mars and beyond. It's an astonishing technological feat, but the grandeur of the technology must be balanced with its impact, both on the Earth and in the sky. There's no room for cutting quarters with this when you're dealing with projects this large. Now, thank you so much for listening to the show today. Remember to hit the subscribe or the follow button on your favorite podcast platform. It's free, just takes a second, and helps us out tremendously. Our podcast has grown so much because of you, and you're part of this amazing community. Now, each episode is about 10 minutes long or less, so you can catch up quickly on the latest news. And until next time, please take care of yourselves and each other. And I'll see you on the next one. Moving on, we're going to be talking about SpaceX's Starship. Elon Musk and SpaceX have announced its plans to conduct the second flight test of the formidable Super Heavy rocket and its companion, the Starship upper stage, targeting a period in mid-November for the launch. The focus is on the buildup to this momentous event and the hurdles yet to be overcome before liftoff can proceed. Now, the planned launch hinges on the critical approval from regulatory bodies, including the Federal Aviation Administration and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. These organizations are in the final stages of an environmental review, scrutinizing the launch site nestled amongst the wetlands of South Texas. And despite the pending approvals, SpaceX's announcement hints at a confident stance that the necessary endorsements are within reach, aligning with insider reports suggesting that federal consent is imminent. Now, SpaceX's journey to this point has been marked by both triumphs and setbacks. The inaugural launch of the full Starship stack, including a Super Heavy booster, was met with technical challenges. And despite issues with engine ignition and flight path deviations resulting in the vehicle's termination, the company harvested valuable insights from the April 20th event. Now, the aftermath also included infrastructural damage at the launch site, where the force of the engines impacted the pad and nearby wetlands. Since the April launch, SpaceX has not been idle. The launch pad has been rebuilt, now featuring a water sound suppression system to dampen the force of liftoff, and the assessment by the Fish and Wildlife Service will determine if these improvements will sufficiently protect the local environment from the intense forces of the rocket's ignition and the climb through the atmosphere. Now, SpaceX's approach to the second launch exhibits meticulous planning, with a proposed morning launch window aiming to capitalize on optimal conditions. Insider sources suggest that the earliest possible date for this pioneering flight could be November 13th. However, the schedules remain flexible, with SpaceX awaiting the final green light. Now, the second test flight's agenda resembles the initial attempt, with the Starship upper stage planned to engage in a 90-minute flight, potentially achieving a near-complete orbit before its descent into the Pacific Ocean. This ambitious journey will end near Kauai, testing the spacecraft's endurance and re-entry capabilities. A crucial change in the launch sequence involves the introduction of a hot staging technique, which promises to enhance the payload capacity of the Starship rocket significantly. And Elon Musk has provided details on this technical advancement, describing the protective measures required for the booster stage. Anticipated 10% increase in payload capacity comes from igniting the Starship's engines before it detaches from the Super Heavy booster, a procedure that poses additional risks but promises greater rewards in terms of efficiency and for power. And recovery of the rocket stages is not the goal of this mission. Instead, the focus is on validating the Super Heavy's flight credentials and, if successful, analyzing the Starship's performance post-separation. Musk himself pegs the success rate at about a 60% for Starship reaching its targeted endpoint, a testament to the inherent uncertainties in cutting-edge space flight endeavors. Now, at the heart of SpaceX's venture is a comprehensive review by the FAA, which recently announced the completion of a safety component of their assessment regarding the South Texas facility. Now, this step, accomplished on October 31st, is integral to ensuring the protection of public health and safety, particularly after the mishap during the April test flight. And following the April incident, meticulous evaluation was mandated, resulting in the identification of 63 corrective actions that SpaceX must implement before another launch attempt. And the FAA, alongside its safety inquiry, continues to delve into the environmental aspects of the launch, holding consultations with various agencies, including the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And these discussions are aimed at assessing the potential impact on local wildlife, including several endangered species, and addressing concerns raised by the debris fallout from the previous launch attempt. Now, as SpaceX's facilities expand in Boca Chica, Texas, the implications of their operations extend beyond the realm of just aerospace. The company's request to dispose of treated wastewater into the sensitive ecosystem of South Bay has garnered attention and concern. And with SpaceX's growth comes a greater responsibility to the environment, an underscore by the public comment period facilitated by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality on this matter. And the interplay between technological advancement and environmental stewardship is starkly evident in SpaceX's expansion in South Texas. The proximity of the launch facility to sensitive wetlands and protected species presents a unique set of challenges. The Fish and Wildlife Service's biological assessment is critical to ensuring that SpaceX's operation don't adversely affect the piping plover, red knot birds, and endangered sea turtles that inhabit the region. The fallout from the failed April launch underscores the magnitude of SpaceX's responsibilities to the local environment and to the community surrounding it. Debris scattered for miles and the subsequent grass fires ignited debates on the risks associated with such ambitious test flights. And the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality's involvement, particularly concerning SpaceX's wastewater disposal plans, highlights the broader community concerns related to SpaceX's growth. Public engagement through platforms like the SaveRGV group expresses the collective voice of those who stand in opposition to practices they believe could harm the delicate balance of the local ecosystem. And as the company navigates the complex processes of securing necessary permissions, the intersection of aerospace and ecological preservation remains a point of keen public interest. Now, as we approach the mid-November window for SpaceX's next launch, The second flight test of the Super Heavy rocket and the Starship upper stage marks a huge leap in space exploration capabilities, but also serves as a testament to human ingenuity and the spirit of perseverance. Now, regulatory approvals are on the cusp of completion, and the stage is set for what could be a defining moment in the quest to push the boundaries of what's possible. SpaceX's journey to the upcoming launch has been fraught with both technological triumphs and environmental concerns, reflecting the multifaceted nature of pioneering in the space sector. As we wait the final word on the environmental and safety assessments, the coming days will be crucial in determining the trajectory of the Starship's test flight. Thank you so much for joining us today in this episode. We appreciate you tuning in to stay informed about the latest developments in SpaceX's quest for the launch of the Starship vehicle. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to hit the subscribe or the follow button on your preferred platform. It's free, just takes a second, and helps us out tremendously. We're growing because of you. You're part of this great community. And remember, each episode is designed to be concise, helping you stay informed in about 10 minutes or less. So please take care of yourselves and each other, and I'll see you tomorrow. We're going to be talking about a recent astronomical event that has left scientists absolutely captivated. Researchers have found evidence that two worlds, two planets around a star 1,800 light years away, have collided with one another in a cosmic catastrophe. No, this isn't science fiction. This has actually happened. Now, the initial observations of this awe-inspiring event came from the All-Sky Automated Survey for Supernovae, or the ASAS-SN project. This network of telescopes alerted Matthew Kenworthy, an astronomer at the Leiden Observatory in the Netherlands, about the near total dimming of a sun-like star, designated ASASN 21QJ. Now, such dimming could be caused by various phenomena, but what piqued Kenworthy's interest was that this star had also shown a sudden increase in brightness about 2.5 years earlier. A connection seemed likely, prompting him to investigate further. Utilizing data from the Las Cumbres Observatory Global Telescope and NASA's infrared space telescope NEOWISE, Kenworthy and his team found that the infrared flaring of the star was consistent with a heat emission hot enough to melt aluminum. In other words, the evidence pointed to a cataclysmic event around the star. And Kenworthy theorized that this drastic shift in the star's brightness was most likely due to the aftermath of a planet-to-planet collision. Dust and debris from the impact would have spread out, eventually blocking the star's light as observed from Earth. And this theory was further supported by the star's estimated age of around 300 million years, a time when planetary systems are generally more prone to chaotic events. While a planet-to-planet collision is a rare event in itself, Kenworthy's theory took on even more exotic twist. The temperatures indicated by the data weren't consistent with a full head-on collision between two planets. Rather, they pointed to a slightly off-center collision that resulted in a unique structure known as Syn-Isha, a sort of cosmic donut of dust debris. Now, the formation of this would explain the data collected, including the emission of heat at around 1,000 kelvins. And to make this discovery even more intriguing, this would be the first time this has ever been observed if the observations are confirmed through further studies. And as the research team pored over the data, inconsistencies began to crop up. And while the temperature rise suggested an impact, it wasn't quite hot enough to align with the energy output one would expect from two massive celestial bodies colliding head-on. This conundrum led Matthew Kenworthy to a particularly unique phenomenon known as Syn-Isha. Now, this occurs when two planets collide off-center, spinning in such a manner that the resultant debris forms a shape akin to a red blood cell. And this off-center collision explains the lower-than-expected temperatures measured, hovering about 1,000 kelvins. However, not everyone was ready to jump on this bandwagon. A competing paper from Jonathan Marshall and his colleagues proposed a different explanation altogether, focusing on the disintegration of interstellar comet fragments rather than planet-to-planet impacts. And Marshall pointed to several factors, such as the age of the star, ASSN 21QJ, and the chemical makeup of the dust as evidence for the alternative theory. His calculations suggested the star was around 5 billion years old, far older than the 300 million years estimated by Kenworthy's team. An older star, Marshall argued, would be less likely to host such a dramatic event given the presumed stability of the planetary system. And as the scientific community debated these competing theories, it became clear that more robust data would be needed to definitively settle the question. Now, plans are already in motion to use more powerful observations in observatories like NASA's upcoming James Webb Telescope and European Southern Observatory's ground-based Extremely Large Telescope to scrutinize the SSN21QJ and its curious phenomenon. Now, these advanced platforms could be the key to unlocking the secrets of this puzzling event, offering unprecedented levels of detail and potentially resolving the current scientific stalemate. To really nail down what happened, we'll need more advanced equipment. So James Webb and the European Southern Observatory's Extremely Large Telescope could provide that data. The continued study of this event and others like it will give us critical insights into the often chaotic process that governed planet formation and the evolution of our solar system and our universe. The bottom line is, whether it's a donut shape from a planet-to-planet collision or a disintegrating comet, the discovery offers a remarkable glimpse into cosmic events that we often only get to read about in science fiction. And in the universe filled with countless stars and planets, occurrences like these are reminders that everything is chaos in the universe, and it's unpredictable. So thank you so much for listening to the show today. And please, if you could, take a second and hit the subscribe or the follow button on whatever podcast platform you're on right now. It really helps out the show tremendously. And I want to say thank you to everybody who's been supporting the show by doing that. Thank you. You're part of this great community that we're building, and we're also building it over on YouTube, youtube.com/spacenewspod, where we bring you all the fun things that are happening in space exploration, space flight, and the cosmic beyond. So please take care of yourselves and each other, and I'll see you in the next episode.